Mangy dogs, swab the decks and hoist the sails. The guns on board be needing some proper madam. Pieces of eight and a fine wench on your arm, if your work be not too shoddy. Careful not to flounder too badly, though, or you may have to dance the hempen jig, as we see you to Davy Jones. But Jeffy, my boy, on with the show.
Avast, me hotties. To our listeners from across all regions of the planet, welcome once again aboard the Robin Hood, flagship to the world's one and only cooperatively inspired charity podcast network, WPRPN. Live streaming today from under strangely sticky spring Asian skies, I'm your host, as always, the ship's chief communications officer, Jaffe Ryder. Tackling the show live via Google Hangouts, this week's guest is Eugene, Oregon's Ghost Seekers Paragon team leader, Deborah Ross So. Deborah's interest in mysteries of the paranormal started out at a young age. During weekend family outings when her father was off work, she'd visit old caverns, creepy abandoned farmhouses, and many other miscellaneous spooky locations. However, it wasn't until later in life she had her first real ghostly encounter. Speaking with her brother at home, their conversation was suddenly interrupted by the phone's urgent clamor. As it turned out, the local police were calling to inform her the very same brother she'd been speaking to moments earlier had actually just been killed in a tragic car accident out on the highway. Following this incident, she decided it was time to form the Ghost Seekers Paragon. The independent Oregon-based paranormal research group investigates various properties, private residences, businesses, and cemeteries. Photography, video, EMF, thermal imaging, temperature readings, ghost vox, and EVP are among the main methods ghost seekers use to detect paranormal activity. Their main goal is not only to try and capture genuine evidence of supernatural phenomenon, but also spiritually cleanse all haunted locations. As they themselves tell us, Ghost Seekers Paragon is not a TV reality show. They are real paranormal investigators. And I do think that we have Deborah here now joining us out on the docks of Skullport Harbor for this week's show. We weren't too sure just in the last 48 hours here, basically, whether or not we'd be managing to put this episode together or not, but it looks like we have you. So thanks, Deborah, for dropping by.
Oh, you're very welcome. Glad to be here.
You know, I was actually going to, I've listened to a little bit of what you've done here, some of the shows and the interviews and whatnot that you've got archived on YouTube and that sort of thing, and was going to nickname you something along the lines of the Stevie Nicks of World Paranormal or something like that. I'm not sure if you've heard that before, but have you ever had anyone else tell you you sound like Stevie Nicks?
No.
There's a first. Are you a Fleetwood Mac fan by chance?
I know them, yeah.
Okay.
But I don't personally know them.
Right. So, actually, she herself has been, I'm not sure where you stand on this whole issue, but she has been, over the years, people have tried to label her a witch, although she says that's not the case at all, and that's just not her.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so... You yourself identify as a Christian, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, right. So we'll get a little more into that as the show goes on here. That was one of the questions that we had for you, actually, as far as this whole business of spiritual protection and that sort of thing. And, you know, when you enter into these haunted locations, how you've got to take precautions, of course, to ensure that you're protected from potential demonic or some sort of attacks from who knows what and who knows where exactly. So today's a little different, I guess, than what the way we normally run things. We're in Google Hangouts here. This is a first, actually, for Pirate Radio Podcasts. We typically have our weekly episode run through Skype, but that's fine. It's kind of it's fun, fresh, new, and exciting. So we'll give it a shot here and see how things play out. You and I actually first, I think we met up on Facebook. I'm not sure. What was it? Did I pitch you the idea of doing a show, or was it the other way around? You thought that maybe it would be a good idea if we put something together here at some point. Do you remember?
I remember whenever we started talking, whenever you started doing your radio show in the beginning.
Okay, yeah. I mean, the whole, for me, that's everything's such a blur at this stage that I'm not too, a lot of things that just kind of go completely over my head. So this is actually the third kind of paranormal, supernatural type show that we've worked on producing. The first was about the fifth or sixth. That was The Haunting of Summer Winds. I'm not sure if you've heard of that house or not. It's up, and I think it's, as I recall, in northern Wisconsin. Joshua Chairs was our featured guest at that time. We also did a Halloween show with Teresa M. Clayton, and that was really quite something. A lot of spooky stuff presented there. I'm not sure if you managed to catch that one or not, but and now today we've got you, of course. So I've been doing a little bit of homework and research. Why don't we just start things then, I guess, from, I guess it was in 2006 that you put Ghost Seekers Paragon together, and it all had to do with this strange encounter that you had with your brother one night. Why don't you just kind of explain to listeners what happened?
Yeah, my brother passed away in a car accident, and we were actually up there visiting him, and he had to go to work one night, and we were all supposed to meet up at a bowling alley, and he never showed up. And so we went back to his house where my other brother was living too. They were all living together. I don't know, everybody went to sleep, and I woke up at like 9 o'clock at night to knocking on the window. As I come around the bed, I saw the clock and it said 9 o'clock, and I looked out and it was my brother on the other side of the window, and he told me to take care of my mom and dad, and it was raining outside, so I just assumed that he was going to go to the store or whatever, you know. But I told him to come inside, but when I went around to the front door to let him in, he wasn't there. So I went back to bed, and then I woke up like, I don't know, 3 or 4 hours later, it was 1 o'clock in the morning, to a cop being at the door. And they wanted to talk to my parents, and so I took them to my parents, and they said that my brother passed away in a car accident at 9 o'clock.
And although you, as you recall, had been speaking to him a short time before that, he had appeared outside your window, and you had just a brief conversation with him. What did he tell you exactly?
He told me to take care of my mom and dad.
Mm-hmm. And he appeared to you as if he was real.
I mean, he had his work clothes on. I remember it was a striped shirt, black pants that he had on. He was just as real as me and you.
Do you think that, and we've got a few kind of bugs or gremlins in the works here too. It's kind of interesting doing this show as we are. I'm not sure why the slideshow is all frozen up here, but that's just how things are going to have to function here tonight. So we have one picture of, I'm not sure if that's you or maybe your daughter, and I think her girlfriend, actually part of the team. We can get into that in just a moment or two here too. You can give us a rundown of who is a part of your operation. But do you yourself not feel there's only certain people that have this ability, perhaps, to see spirits and ghosts? And of course he came to you, I would imagine, for a reason, because of your close personal connection. But maybe a lot of people that would not have these experiences or have the ability to see spirits or disembodied entities, but you for some reason do. You've had an interest in these sort of matters since you were a kid as well. I was gleaning through or glancing over the kind of rough biography that you've put together, and this was the first ghostly encounter you had with your brother, but up until this point, you always had been sort of drawn to kind of spooky places and investigating houses and old abandoned locations and so forth. Why don't you just tell us a little bit about that, if you would?
Well, whenever I was a kid, my mom and dad used to go on weekend drives, and my dad used to take us around to all these empty, abandoned places everywhere, you know. They were abandoned out in the middle of nowhere down a gravel road. It was really interesting. I was always interested in that. But, I don't know, I guess since we moved, he stopped doing that. It always seemed like he knew these places everywhere we went. I don't know. It was weird.
So your dad would take you to these locations, and not you wouldn't...
Yeah, our entire family, yeah.
Oh, and now you're not sure, did he have an interest in the paranormal as well, did you say, or you weren't too sure what was his intent or motivation?
My mom and dad have told some ghost stories, believe me, and a lot of them, he'd be a kid up in the top floor of his house, and across the way on the hill used to sit a cemetery, and every night he'd see lights moving around in the cemetery. And he was always afraid to come through the cemetery, which was the shortest way to home from where he worked at, because of the lights being in the cemetery. And my mom used to tell us ghost stories about how every time her mom and dad would go off to work, which was usually late at night, they would leave the kids alone in the house because there was an older son there anyways. But they used to hide behind the couch because they'd always see lights moving around the home. And even in bed, when they were in the bedroom, they saw a candle move around their bed, just across the top of their bed, and then go out the front door by itself. It's just one candle.
A real candle or something that looked like candle light?
No, it was a real candle. That's what she said.
It actually levitated. It rose from where it was located and made its way out the door. That's what you're saying.
That's correct. Yep.
And
that's what she said.
Where did it end up exactly? It didn't start a fire, I guess.
No, she don't know. She said it went out the door and the door shut behind it.
Well, how bizarre.
And then when they went out the door, because they was always scared to go out the door, but they eventually went out the door and downstairs and hid behind the couch.
And you could tell...
That was their sleep zone.
They weren't pulling your, as we like to say here, on the Robin Hood. They weren't pulling your wooden leg. They weren't joking around at all. Very serious, I guess.
No, it was always the same story every single time. The same way.
How about that? Okay, well, we were actually one of the people that we were hoping to perhaps have join us here today in the Crow's Nest. We typically like to have a co-host, or someone riding shotgun here. I was Occult Priestess, a.k.a. Corinne Wilson. I'm not sure if you know her or not, but maybe she'll pop in or show up here at some point. So, as well as perhaps even Lord Stompy. But in the meantime, we'll be flying solo here myself with Deborah. We've got a few people that are now joining us in the streaming live YouTube chat area. That's great. Yeah, they're interested in hearing more about what it is you have to say and your business and all those sort of good things. So 2006 is when things all came together for you. You decided at that point that it was time to perhaps put a company of sorts together, which includes, from what I understand, your daughter, maybe is it one of her girlfriends? I've seen your son in one of the videos, too, I think. Who are we talking about exactly? Who makes up the core group that accompanies you out on these excursions?
Mainly family. It's mainly my two girls and my older son. But now it's my two girls, my older son, and his girlfriend.
Do you all witness the same phenomenon, or do some people only see certain things at some times and others do not? They just are not able to witness or perceive what others claim that they can apprehend.
You mean as far as my team members or just everybody in general?
Well, when you're out there on these locations, do you all see the same things? Like, I know there was one story you gave, for example. You're out at a cemetery and you saw this dismembered torso running across the graveyard. This is the first time you had visited, I think, a cemetery in a formal kind of way. And, yeah, I guess you said you saw, like, some running shoes, sneakers, and everything. Can you tell us a little bit more about that, more of the particulars?
Well, we were walking through the cemetery, and it was after dark, it was late, and it was pretty dark outside, but we have flashlights, too. The kids, they're my kids, but they're older, they saw the torso and the tennis shoes run across. I did, too. I didn't say anything. And then my son, as we got further down the cemetery, which was almost at the end, he saw the torso and the tennis shoes run across, too. And he said something, you know, he said, did you see the torso and the person running? I was like, no. And he was like, from the waist down, and he had running shoes on. And I was like, okay, well, that's what we saw back there. I said, did you guys see that? And they're like, yeah. But we all didn't say nothing at the time when we all saw it. When we first saw it the first time, we didn't say anything. And that we all, you know, mentioned what we saw, and we mentioned the color of the shoes, color of the shorts, and it was all the same.
How bizarre is that? Incredible. So, since 2006, how many excursions have you embarked on? And on top of that, do you, when you have clients call you up, I guess there's a fee that you charge. What would people be looking at as far as costs are concerned?
I don't charge anything.
Oh, it's totally free. Oh, well, how about that?
I never have.
Do not other paranormal or research, kind of ghost hunters and researchers do, and I know you conduct exorcisms of sorts on a semi-regular basis, from what I understand. So, and a lot of the people that you interact with where they ask you to come and visit what they feel are haunted locations, that they are quite grateful for the effort that you make, especially because it seems to often bear positive results. Whatever technique you use, I think you said you use the Bible. I'm not sure if there's a, is there a particular passage that you typically, that you turn to or use as far as banishing or casting out these unseen or mysterious spiritual forces?
Well, I don't really have a specific passage. I just mainly say what I say. You know, I don't really have to use the Bible too much. I use holy water, but I don't get it from the church. I make my own, and I know that sounds very unusual, but it works.
You collect the water? Where do you gather it from? It's not. Is it like tap water or something? Then you just pray over it?
Yeah.
Or how does that work?
Yeah, you can use tap water, you can use store-bought water, it don't matter. It depends on what you believe in. You have to, in my opinion, you fully have to believe everything that you're saying and blessing that water. Because if you don't, and there's a doubt, it's not going to work.
If it was tap water, I'd believe that the fluoride would scare them away for sure. They'd never want to come back after that fluoride hit them.
That's for sure.
Yeah. There's a couple of clips. The audio quality is not the greatest, unfortunately, but hopefully over time you'll be able to put together more of a portfolio and just a more extensive archive section. Shelley Kurtz, I guess, back in 2008, you'll probably remember the interview you did with her. She, I guess she's part of the KVAL news team out of, I guess it's Eugene, once again, is where you're based out of, so...
We kind of work all over. I mean, my two girls live up in Oregon anyway, so they're, like, investigating up there. And when I go up there, we do it all together. When they come down here, we do it all together here, too, you know. So, I mean, I'm in Arizona, and they're in Oregon. They were just here not more than a week ago.
Wow, well, how about that? So what sort of, now, do you get on a plane or jump in a truck or a car?
I just drive.
What sort of road trip are we looking at there, hour-wise? I'm unsure, like, from Arizona to Oregon, that's quite a haul, is it not?
About 14 hours.
Oh, my God. How much would it be for a plane ticket? $100?
No, it's more like $300.
Jeez. What do you end up paying on for gas?
Well, it depends on what you drive. I mean, I think Amanda, she paid like $200 to get down here.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, the drive is awesome. And you go through all these old towns, you know, like Tonopah and Goldfield and all that, the ghost towns.
Yeah, I actually went down. I made it down through Eugene and let's see where else. I was out on the coast highway there. I guess, is it the 23? If I got my numbers straight, I'm not sure. The I-5, I guess, is the main thoroughfare,
right,
freeway that they've got.
That's the main corridor.
Yeah,
Oregon.
But the coastal highway, is it 23?
I don't know.
Not sure.
I mean, I know there's 97, and there's I-5. Those are, like, the main highways through there.
Yeah. Well,
not sure about the coast. California, it's a 101, but...
Mm-hmm. Oh, a beautiful drive down through the Redwood Forest, and... It was a road trip that I went on with a girlfriend back in the summer of 95. Portland, I guess that's where we kind of maybe headed off more to the coast. We were actually trying to track down, we're looking for the Grateful Dead to begin with, and then found out that Bob Dylan was playing in, I guess it was Reno, supposedly. But this is after we'd made our way all the way back up from Baja, Mexico, where we'd had a bit of a holiday for, I guess, close to a week or something like that. So driving up through, I'm not sure if we cut into, I don't think Arizona at all, but Nevada definitely, and the Sierra is at the Sierra Nevada mountain range and across through to Shasta. Yeah, it's some beautiful land and territory and history. And, yeah, it was really a great time for sure. Eugene, definitely, yeah, a little bit of street busking in that town, which was a lot of fun for sure.
Eugene's different. I mean, it's a great town to live in, but when we lived there, because we did live in Eugene, and they found, you know, where they built the hospital there, the River Bend Hospital. Building that hospital, like when they were excavating the ground, they found a family that dated back in the 1800s that had died and been buried there. They don't know how they got there, but they did find the bodies there, and it was an entire family.
Entombed or buried beneath the hospital?
No. It was buried in the ground before the hospital was built.
Okay, so they built the hospital then, maybe is what it sounds like, just on top of where some people had themselves been buried. Was it just one family that they found, or was there quite a few, like it was like on top of a cemetery?
No, it was one family, and it was a Stevens family from what they said. But they found this family when they were like moving the ground out to build the hospital. Like they hadn't built the hospital yet, but while they were shaping the ground out for parking spaces and stuff like that, they found the family buried in the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And with all the artifacts and stuff that they had on them, they dated them back in the 1800s.
Okay, looks like we got Lord Stompy here trying to join us via the Google Hangout platform. We're going to have to work on this to see. It's a little bit clunky right now from my end here, unfortunately, just with, you know, sharing links. And he's logged into Google, and I guess he's having some issues there not being able to hook up with us at this moment. So hopefully that'll work out here at some point. But now, you mentioned something about the Reed School. You know this case quite well, and how a scaffolding is said to have collapsed in the 1800s. I'm not sure if there was one or two or how many people died exactly, but can you just fill us in a little more on the details?
Well, when they were building the Reed School, this is a little schoolhouse in Bend, Oregon. The main construction guy who was building it, he was out on the scaffold looking over to make sure everybody was doing their work and how it was looking and all that. And the scaffold gave way, and he fell to his death right in front of the door there.
And it's been haunted ever since? There's, like, ghostly apparitions that have appeared since that time? Is that right?
Right. They said that when they were having a get-together at the museum there, which the school is now a museum, that there was a pianist in one of the room, and he was playing the piano for people. And he said a man came in and sat down in a chair and sat there and listened to him the whole time. Just happened to look over and look at the picture on the wall and seeing that it was the man who fell over the scaffold. Whenever he went to ask him his name, the man politely gave him a nod and walked away. He didn't say who he was or anything, but he just gave him a nod and walked away.
How many times has this occurred or this apparition been witnessed then by people?
Several times. I mean, that was the first time with the piano guy. I don't know who the pianist was, but...
How about that? So, let's see. Okay, well, Stompy here, I think...
However,
go ahead.
We did capture an apparition in that skull when we investigated it.
Ah, right. Yes, yes, yes. And you've, in fact, got pretty decent quality video footage there. In fact, I think that was recently featured on another paranormal channel. What's the name of the fellow, the show that he featured, the footage that he shot there quite recently? Do you know who I'm talking about?
I know who you're talking about, and I can't remember the name. I'm sorry.
Oh, it's okay. Fill us in a little more then and give us a rundown of the details there, what exactly happened based. You had a camera set up, I guess, and then you were off in the background or in the foreground, kind of just looking around and trying to do what have you, and then suddenly there was some sort of entity that it seems skirted across the view of the camera. What more can you tell us about that?
We were in the other room, investigating the other room, which was almost right in front of the door, but to the left. And the lady who was standing in front of the door and the guy who's standing in front of the door, the guy is the newspaper guy that was with us. And the lady who's off to the left that works at the museum there. And they were just kind of out in the hallway chit-chat. And if you see on the video, you can see this spirit move around those people and come walking down the hallway. And when it almost gets right in front of my camera, it just like appears, the entire body appears and then disappears. I mean,
yeah.
Really quick, my camera wasn't clear at the time, Why? Because that was the only time that camera acted like that. Real staticky and stuff, that's what it looks like.
Speaking of static and those sort of things, hopefully we won't have too much here on this end, or at least as far as what people are even listening from their vantage point. But Stompy, do we have you? It looks like you popped in here. Did you manage to make it? Got his icon up there, his avatar. Stompy? He's based out of Adelaide, Australia, actually. Street busker, among a number of other things. Man of many occupations. Wears numerous hats. So, a friend of ours from Minds. Have you heard of Minds.com, Deborah? I think I might have actually sent you a few links for groups and that sort of thing.
But you did, and it's the first time I've heard about it, yes.
Oh, geez, I tell you, it's way, you talk about, Facebook and Twitter and YouTube. Well, I mean, it's all three of those other platforms basically put together and better. So if you check it out, you'll see, you get booster points for your activity, and there's encrypted chat, and the hashtag system is just mind-blowing. You know how on Facebook you have to pay for your booster points? Not on Minds. You actually acquire booster points just participating. So yeah, a lot of good fun over there for sure. Really worth your while to check it out. Yeah. Well,
I mean, I kind of looked it over.
Pardon me? Oh, you kind of looked it over.
I kind of looked it over. Mm-hmm. Didn't really get into it too much.
Well, this is something. We do have Stompy there, but unfortunately, he's not coming through for some reason. So if you can there, Lord Stompy, maybe text a little bit or type to us in the... His mic is dead. There we go. All right. Okay. We'll carry on as we were to this point and to see what other material we can plow through here. So I looked up the word Paragon because, of course, the name of your outfit is Ghost Seekers Paragon. Once again, based out of Eugene, Oregon, although, as you say, partly in Arizona these days is, I guess, where you call home. That's your home state at the moment. So, but Paragon, I like to consider myself something of a wordsmith, enjoying the English language very much and always having fun with language and all those sort of good things, wordplay, etymology, looking into the history of words and their meaning. But Paragon, that I was lost on that one. I had to actually go to the dictionary to get confirmation there as to what that meant. I should have known, of course, but yeah, why don't you tell us then, what does Paragon mean exactly?
Pretty much the best.
All right, yeah. Cream of the crop, huh? So, yeah.
I'm not saying that we're the best, but we do our best.
Yes, absolutely. And are there, in fact, not, I'm not sure if I really, we got clear on this or not, what we kind of had hit on earlier, but do not other groups actually charge money?
Other groups charge money, but we don't.
Right. Yeah.
I never have.
Mm-hmm. Never will, I guess, from the sounds of it.
After us, you know, they've donated money to us, they've donated equipment to us. But we've never charged anything.
Oh, I see.
We've never asked for it.
Okay, so you'll accept donations, but you don't formally charge anything. Okay. Has anyone ever donated gas money, or they maybe gave you lunch or dinner or something like that?
No.
What? Oh, my God. Those ghosts aren't going anywhere, if you'd ask me then. Forget it. If I was a ghost and these people weren't, they weren't helping me remove myself from the haunted situation, I'd definitely want to cause more mischief for sure. But hey, speaking of which, and Stompy, unfortunately, yes, his mic problems are continuing to plague him on his end, but we'll hang in there and hopefully manage to get him coming through here before too long. But are you a believer in reincarnation?
To a point, yes.
Okay.
I mean, I say that because I looked up my dad's genealogy, and 100 years ago, I can't really remember, but I remember the picture as well. I found other relatives on my dad's side, straight line grandfathers. Also my dad. Split an image like it was my dad all over again. Twice over.
So you're saying what? That I'm not sure that you are your grandfather's reincarnated self or something like that? Or what are you getting at exactly?
I'm saying that I think that my dad was reincarnated three times over. The pictures that I found look just like my dad, to a split in the image. The same eye color, same eyebrows, same facial features, same skin tone, same hairstyle, everything.
And who is he reincarnated as then, exactly? Where did it all start? How, you said this went back a few generations.
Right, from his grandfather's.
Was his grandfather, did his grandfather, had he already passed away by the time he was born?
Oh, yeah, like 100 years ago. And 100 years before that, too.
Yeah. I guess kind of partly what I'm getting at here, though, is with the way that spirits and hauntings, these sort of things are said to work, that, yes, supposedly these entities can be cleansed from wherever it is that they want to attach themselves, but, well, and then when that happens, I mean, it's go to the light, although some people say that isn't the best idea, necessarily. So, but, you know, don't they... Once an area is cleansed and no longer haunted, I guess then that soul or spirit goes on to be reincarnated as a new being of some sort. Would that seem to kind of make sense?
Well, that depends. Depends on if it wants to go or, you know, if it's got unfinished business or, you know, it depends on a lot of things, a lot of factors before you can actually just send it to the light. You know, and it has to be welcome in the light before you can send it to the light.
Yes. You feel, though, you have been successful on a number of occasions, and that clients, people you've worked for or worked with, that have asked you to come and to take a look at where they feel they've got some inexplicable phenomenon occurring, that you've been successful in helping exercise the area of these entities.
Every time.
Every 100% batting average, then. Is that the case? Is that right?
Every time.
Well,
my friends have never had an issue after we've been there.
You know, and here's the thing, too. I'm not too sure if everyone can do this. Like I was kind of hinting at earlier, it's maybe some people, such as yourself, have certain abilities or skills or just, you know, that they're naturally gifted with. In the same way some people are naturally gifted with painting or playing the piano or, you know, you name it, sports or what have you. Some people are more spiritually attuned and could have something to do with their vibration or the frequency that they resonate at. And you've kind of got that sort of thing going on. So... would you not, I guess you would consider this part of your calling then, I would imagine, that this is something that you were kind of born to do.
I presume.
It just feels right.
But I think everybody has a natural ability to do it. It's just acceptance. If you're willing to accept the facts, or you're willing to just deny it and overlook it.
Accept the facts or accept the facts or deny and overlook what? That we have these gifts, whoever, you know, these people are? Or
that you have these gifts.
Right.
You see what you saw, you know. Understand that you do debunk stuff, okay? But it gets to the point where there's no more debunking and there has to be something there. Another cause or another reason why, you know, you reach a point of, there's no more debunking something because you've already done everything you could possibly do to debunk it. So there has to be other reasons or causes for what you've heard, what you've captured.
Yeah, what you've seen and what you've witnessed.
Spirit, the entity is something besides there's no more debunking.
Well, and that's the approach that a person should take, you would think. We've got to be skeptical, and I've heard you, you know, state on the record, of course, in past interviews that you've done, that, you know, you take a very skeptical approach, and as we all should, of course, so, but yeah, you're right, I agree, it does get to the point where there's just there's no further way of explaining things, really, other than and it's beyond the realm of science, really, because science really likes to kind of have its hands on things, and really... be able to measure, and this kind of actually speaking of measure goes and ties into this business of where you have the equipment you work with, the thermal imaging technology and the, is it the EVP readers and so on and so forth. But what then, Yeah, give us an overview, kind of breakdown of what you actually carry with you as you embark on these outings and excursions.
My cameras, my voice recorders, my temperature guns, my ghost box, my night vision cameras.
Ghost box and night vision cameras. Have you ever caught, how much have you actually picked up on your night vision cameras over the years?
Well, my night vision cameras, I've caught a couple of things. But it's mainly photography that I capture. It's really hard to capture something in motion. You know, unless you set up cameras everywhere. At the right angle, too. You know, that night at the Reed school, we got lucky with that one. Because we had cameras set up on the first floor and the second floor, too. But not in every room. We just happened to set the camera up right in the place where that thing showed itself.
Well, and that's the thing, too, is like you spend a lot of time on location at these sites. It calls and requires a lot of patience, of course, because you don't always get something with each visit that you make. Is that not the case? That sometimes there's just nothing that comes up at all, correct?
Right. I mean, you can go there one night and nothing happens. Mm-hmm. You come back a week later, but then the next night after you leave, something happens.
Somebody reports something having occurred just the next day after you've left. Yeah, that sort of thing. And do you actually camp out as far as, you're spending the whole night there with sandwiches and coffee and the whole bit, and then you leave in the morning, or how does it typically work?
We have done that several times.
You show up at dusk? You come in just kind of like late, kind of rather early evening, and what time do you usually set up camp?
Around 9:30, 10 o'clock at night, and then don't pull out to maybe 5 a.m. sometimes.
And how many locations have you actually investigated in the 10-plus years now that you've been in operation?
Well over 50 or so, maybe more.
Okay, so about five a year, I guess is what it sounds like, maybe six, something along those lines.
Yeah, I mean, I could investigate everywhere, you know, but I'd rather investigate places that have known hauntings or places that have a history, you know, or when somebody calls us in. I just don't want to go everywhere.
Right. We're going to see if we got Stompy managed to get his mic working there and the technical end of things straightened out. So I see you've got a new avatar you've got up there, X-Split Broadcaster. Stompy, did you manage to make it up into the crow's nest? No, still nothing. So how about that? From time to time, he does, you know, struggle with the technical end of things. So who knows what's going on there? Is it a ghost? Is it a spirit? Or is it just a standard sort of bug issue? It's anybody's guess. All right, well, we'll keep rolling along here then. Now, ghost boxes. This is really quite something because I think, was it not Thomas Edison invented the first ghost box?
I'm not sure. Somebody did.
Somebody must have, unless it just fell out of the sky one day or, you know, surprising somebody.
Ghost boxes are mainly made. You know, they're not produced or anything over the counter unless somebody makes them. Like a paranormal investigator makes them and then sells them.
Yeah. I'm going to just see if we can. This is usually something we like to leave up to the co-producer to work on getting to the bottom of. But I'm just going to do a quick DuckDuckGo search here and see if we can find out who, in fact, was the first person. So, history of EVP, spirit voice, ghost box, and ITC communication. What does that stand for? Probably got an idea. ITC communication?
It's in the air. I'm not really sure what ITC stands for.
Okay. That's, so Frank Sumption is the name here that seems to be popping up. Frank Sumption.
More of a wave, radio wave, white noise.
What about white noise?
It's more of a radio wave, white noise, the ghost boxes. The voices come through in the signal wave. It picks up words.
You yourself, actually, I guess your mother passed away a number of years ago, from what I understand. She actually came through to you one day with one of these methods or basically instruments that you have. How did that all come about, and what did she say?
I was talking, and I suppose, I can't really remember because I haven't gone over the thing, but I do recall her saying that I love you. I have it on video on YouTube.
Yeah, you've got it up on YouTube there, and you can hear her say, or something is saying, I love you. So we've got Todd Jackson joining us here again this week, so that's great. Hey, Todd, big shout-out to you. He, of course, was part of the Buddha. We had the Buddha's birthday was a big thing for us here on the Robin Hood just a couple of weeks ago. So, but he's saying here that, what is it, something about water? She's right about the water. Maybe you can elaborate there in the YouTube chat area as far as what you're really trying to get at there. Todd Maripia, hey, yo, yeah, slow connection. Our slideshow is frozen. We're not too sure what's going on there exactly. Mary Pia from out of Virginia, USA, of course. And Todd is, as I recall, Las Vegas-based resident. So we've got pretty much people scattered out all over the globe. Joe 333, if he's still with us, of course, being in South Korea. Faceless Troll up in Ontario, Canada. So this is really great to see. Go ahead, Deborah, what was that? One more time.
I also have another story. I didn't really record it, but I guess I should have. Anyways, I was up late one night, and I was just mainly on my phone. I don't know if you saw me post this on Facebook or not, but I was up late one night, and I was on my phone, and I heard something say, hey. And I looked over where I heard it, and there was nothing there. So I went back to my phone, and it said, hey, and there was nothing there. And I thought that was kind of odd, you know. And so I went back to my phone again, and I heard something say, hey. And when I turned and looked, but it said, hi, like right in front of my face. And I was like, I wasn't scared. I was just more startled. And then I heard footsteps walk all the way to my front door while there was more like a chit-chat, giggling type sound. I couldn't really understand what they were saying. But I was watching, and I did not see anything. Like there was no mist or funny smells or anything like that, but it was there. I heard that. And yeah, that happened in my own house.
That was actually in Arizona, or when you were younger, like a child growing up? Where did this actually take place?
This was in Arizona at my own house, like maybe 3 weeks ago.
Oh, well, how about that? Well, here's the thing, too, and something that we definitely want to hit on as far as the prayer power. You know, I myself know that if ever I was a part of something like this, I would definitely want to do some sort of spiritual protection. I'm not sure what that would constitute exactly other than, well, why don't we just hear from you? What sort of techniques do you prefer, or do you think, what seems to work for you as far as preparing yourself to go into these locations?
Well, before you go into a location, you always want to pray. You know, pray that God stands beside you and that, you know, keeps you safe from everything around you. Gives you, you know, kind of open enough to see what's going on, but doesn't let anything bother you at the same time. You got to keep the faith. You got to believe, again, you got to believe everything that you say. Otherwise, it don't work. If you're a Christian like I am, you truly believe in everything you say. You just have to believe. Otherwise, this will not work. And with my genealogy, way back to, you know, when Jesus, when the followers used to follow Jesus.
I'm sorry, you're saying your family lineage or ancestry can be traced back?
All the way back to Jesus, yes.
Well, how does that work? Maybe you can fill us in a little more on the details. So, Ross So, I'm not sure if that's your husband's name or not, but isn't that Scottish? I'm just guessing here.
No, that's Italian.
It's purely Italian. Both your parents were Italian, were they?
Not my parents, no. My husband's, yes.
And from your end of things, Welsh, Scottish?
British.
British of some sort, okay.
From British to French to people that lived over there in Israel and Egypt.
Palestine, perhaps, too.
From what I can.
I would imagine. So, yes. Now, well, let's, if you could then flesh that in for us a little more. How is it that you reckon you are able to trace your family lineage back to the time of Christ?
Based on ancestry.
So your family has kept books and family tree together for 2,000 plus years? written down in some...
Pretty close, yes.
Well, when are you going to share that with us on Facebook, then? I'd be interested in seeing this.
Whenever I'm all together. Saying that, but I've been doing it for a while, so...
Are you the only one in possession of these documents?
No. My side of the family is a huge family. A lot of people have that. I mean, it's on the internet, all of it. Over in Britain, they went from kings and queens and knights to, when they came to America, they just became average people.
We got some buffering issues here from the sounds of things, unfortunately, so I'm not sure why that is. It does pop up from time to time, but people that had popped in and were listening via YouTube have just been commenting here in the side, the text chat, that there's these technical issues that seem to be coming to the surface. So that's unfortunate. I hope it doesn't affect the final end product here and what we're actually able to record and get into the archives, because if that's the case, then not sure how we're going to handle that. We'll just have to see how it all kind of comes together, I suppose. On to our next talking point, reality shows. I guess you're not a big fan from the sounds of it as far as other ghost hunting reality shows are concerned. If you could maybe talk to that for a couple minutes, that'd be great.
I mean, granted, they're great. I love Ghost Adventures. They're awesome, you know, and... Ghost Hunters, they're great, but I don't believe they capture everything they capture. That's just my opinion. I'm not there, you know, but that's my take on things. I do watch them. I don't miss a show.
You know, one of the shows that I've actually, that's caught my attention, I'd really like to find out more about whether it's the real deal or not, are these celebrity ghost testimonies. I'm not sure what the name of the show is exactly, but they, you know, they got some, a range of, you know, generally well-known personalities, people in show business and that sort of thing. They talk about their ghostly experiences. David Carradine was one of the more interesting ones that stands out in my memory. I think I managed to download these episodes in there, the full-length episodes, through torrent technology, basically, and have them archived in one place or another here.
David.
You actually met him, did you?
Yeah.
What year was
when
this?
I was an extra.
You were where?
I was an extra in a movie.
Oh, really?
One of his movies.
Cool.
Yeah.
What movie was that?
He was married now. Huh?
What movie was that?
Johnny's Victory.
Okay, and he did what, did you say? Said something else?
He was a karate boxing guy.
Yes. Well, he was Kane out of the, he was that part of the Kung Fu series. As you'll probably recall, you were, you know, just growing up. We did a show on Carradine, actually. It was part of what we had, journalist Mark Ebner. He's a Hollywood-based muckraker. And we talked about a number of different issues, including Carradine's mysterious death, which he, investigated in person. He actually flew to Bangkok and took a look at the scene. Although they had walled off and completely hidden from view based on supposedly the traditional Buddhist views and practices, because someone had died in the room. So it was at that point, from there on in, completely closed off so that no one could go into it. I think he rented the room next to that where Carradine had died. And it was quite something. You could check that show in the archives if you want. We talk a little bit more about Scientology and Hollywood's gay, or what some people refer to as Velvet Mafia. Yes. Very, very interesting stuff.
Interesting.
Pardon me?
I said it sounds interesting.
It was really quite something, definitely, especially within the context of all this talk of Pizzagate, which really, for people such as myself, I like to see it more in terms of pedo-gate, because, you know, it's something that I can't help but think it does occur on a very, at a high level sort of basis, very kind of systemic and institutional throughout the world and realm of politics, you know, using these sort of, things as blackmail material. But we're getting a little bit sidetracked there, of course, too. But that's great you met Carradine. He's quite the character, for sure.
He's so nice.
Yeah. I would have guessed that he would have been an okay kind of got to talk to, and very insightful. And
he was. Mm-hmm. He was very polite. Shook my hand. We was not supposed to talk to him at all. He was, like, standing in my way, and I kind of just stood there and waited till he moved, you know. And then he turned around and was on my shoulder and then kind of shook my hand, and he goes, "Hi, how you doing? I'm David Carey." And I'm like, "Yeah, I know." I said, "Nice to meet you." He goes, "Oh, nice to meet you, too." And he's like, "How was your day?" And I was like, "Oh, good. How was your day?"
Right on. So how long did you actually spend on the set as an extra? Was it like a day or two, or how did that all work out?
Yes.
A couple days, huh? What sort? You got a few $100? Is what they paid you?
I got like $70 a day.
And what sort of extra work was it exactly? Were you like a barmaid or just someone on the street kind of walking down the sidewalk, or how did that all work?
No, I was just a member of the audience that was sitting inside the boxing ring being, you know, glad whenever they, you know, kickbox each other, and was like telling them to go, 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 you know.
Yeah, all right.
Oh, no, don't.
How about that? But no, in the episode that he did, he actually had a premonition. It was this, something to do with someone hanging in a closet. And you can find the clip. It's still there on YouTube. It's a really short clip. The full episode is much better, of course, but really spooky. And there's a lot of people, well, some people at least, don't really buy the, well, how would you say it, death by misadventure, I guess is one. The way that it was officially concluded was that he had hung himself, asphyxiated himself. Is like autoerotic asphyxiation. You know how some people, I guess, they tie themselves up and they get their jollies doing that sort of thing with their things, you know, tied to their genitals. And I'm not sure if women can do that or not, but men seem to have a bit of a.
I don't know about that.
Well, I don't know about the women, but there are some men that have done it and they've died, unfortunately. So it's all quite sad and tragic, of course. But there's some people that do suspect that maybe it really was a little more than what the official narrative would have, you know, lead us to believe, and that with martial arts, the whole Bruce Lee legend and the family curse, as it were, and who knows what sort of characters he was kind of mingling with, rubbing shoulders with, over the course of his career had maybe made a few enemies. I have no idea. I know that Steven Seagal had got into some, basically, trouble with some mafia guys, I guess, that had, I think they'd supported or backed one of his movies, and there was a bit of a, they had some disagreement over the funding of the picture that was being put together and that sort of thing. So, yeah, Hollywood's kind of, well, you know, you often hear stories of Hollywood can be pretty dirty on many levels, for sure. The sex, the drugs, and the rock and roll. Who knows what else exactly, but some pretty... Well, it's Holly Weird, as some often refer to it. But, well, let's see where else we can go with things here today. Now, you've got a couple websites. We're going to, before we wrap things up, now's as good a time as any, I suppose, to let people hear about where it is that they can contact you, and if they are based out of the Eugene, Oregon area, or even in Arizona, because I'd imagine that your kids, they come down to see you from time to time. How many projects have you actually done, or outings have you embarked on down in the Arizona region as compared to Oregon? Is it kind of like a 50-50 split, or how recently did you move to Arizona?
I moved to Arizona like 2 years ago.
Okay, and how many investigations have you conducted in that region since that time?
Probably about 6.
Have your kids joined you for those, or have you just kind of done them all on your own?
Sometimes, yeah. I mean, not all of them, no.
They've been there for a few, then, of the 6. They've been there for, like, maybe 3 or 4, perhaps, 2 or 3, yeah. Okay. Well, and your websites, I think, as I've got them here written down, is you got a couple Facebook contact places people can reach you via that platform. It'd be great if you know, with Minds, you can just easily put together your own channel on Minds.com. But on top of that, your own group too, of course. So you can have your Ghost Seekers Paragon group, and we can link you up quite quickly and easily with the Occult and Mysteries group that we have there. There's another group that I know of. It's the UFOs and Unexplained. And I think that one, they're featuring that one. It's got over 1,000 people in it now. So, you know, any new content that you have to share with the world, we'd be more than happy to promote. Well, here we go. Take two with the episode 62, Rogues Gallery, featured guest for the day, of course, Deborah Rosso of Ghost Seekers Paragon. Really great that she was able to make it. We, it looks like, had a number of technical issues and were only able to actually put together a little more than an hour altogether of our discussion, even though we had recorded close to 2 hours. So, you know, one of the things I'm thinking here, Deborah, and let's not forget, too, we have Joe Eminon from out of Suffolk County, New York, joining us, too. Good old Pirate Joe. And everything seems to be in order here as far as sound levels and audio and whatnot. But, Deborah, if you could just revisit, because, Joe, did you get a chance to hear her Bigfoot story?
I heard very little of the show.
Oh, my God.
I'm not familiar with Deborah at all. I do know about, I know that she does it for free. I did catch that part.
And we can go back, and hopefully it sounds like we got the first hour there. If we could just quickly summarize what we covered in the second half, I'd like to start with that Bigfoot story, because that blew my mind, and I'm sure that it'll really stand to blow the roof off of some other people's heads as well, too, if they get a chance to hear the details. Where was this? What happened? And what exactly did you see on this night that you were driving down the road outside of, was it Needles, California? I'm not too down with the geography, but just give us an overview of your encounter.
It was by Weed, California, Mount Shasta area, and we were driving down Highway 97 there, like 10 miles outside of Weed, and I saw this big, huge trash bag-looking thing, like oversized trash bag, like extraordinary, and I thought it was really odd, and it was really dark outside, so, you know, I thought maybe that it was just my imagination, or it was just way too large, you know. Touched it, that thing moved, and it turned towards my car, and it looked like it was eating a rodent on the side of the road there, and its beady yellow eyes, like, just glared at my car, you know, and then that thing stood up. And I was like, oh, my God. And I slowed down because I didn't quite know what it was until it turned around. And then when it turned around and it stood up, I was like, oh, my God. So I went left, and Bigfoot went left. And I went right, and Bigfoot went right. It didn't matter which way I turned the car. It still jumped in the same way. So as I got closer to it, like, I was just going to hit it, you know. And as I got closer to it, gonna swerve out around it, you know. I needed to get as close as I could to trick it. And then when I did go out around it, that thing appeared to be hitting my car, because I could hear, like, boom, 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 going alongside of, like, right when it was, like, near side of the car, I could hear that thing make a sound like a coyote werewolf type sound, almost like an echo of, like, over the Grand Canyon type echoing, make a really weird, strange sound, and Jaffe knows the sound. I don't want to hear that sound.
How do you know the sound?
Yeah, kind of like that, yep. Yep, yep.
Oh.
That's it.
Well, and, you know, and her husband was there with her, too, in the passenger seat asleep, as were the children in the back. And, yeah, I guess they woke up with a bit of a start. What time of day, this is, how late were we talking, like 10, 11, 12, it was pretty dark, I guess.
Yeah, it was late, it was like between 10 and 12, at least, you know.
But you caught
we were driving from Bend, and however many hours it took, cause we were driving straight through. And it was like from Bend to Weed, you know.
Bend, Oregon?
Yeah.
Well, you caught this thing clear, dead set, straight on in your headlights, too, so there's no mistaking, you weren't, were you overly exhausted or tired at the time, or maybe you had, you weren't intoxicated in any way?
No, I don't drink and drive. And no, I was not tired.
Okay. Well, and I'm not sure what the end result of all this was, but what kind of a rodent did you think that it was feasting on there on the side? There were like a rabbit, maybe, or something? Fox?
It was either a jackrabbit or like a small deer. It was large, I know that.
Coyote, possibly, right?
Maybe, yeah. Maybe even a coyote.
It's about 7 or 8 feet tall is what you could estimate, is that right?
Yeah.
A giant gorilla.
Well, that's not a coyote.
No. This beast itself, the whatever it was, about 7 to 8 feet tall is what she's saying. And
it had no hair on its hands. It had hair on the backside of its hands, though.
Whoa. My God. Oh. So you really kind of were able, this is like kind of frozen in your mind then. You can clearly recall, like this is back in 1999 is what you said when we first addressed this in the featured end of things. And of course, what I'm thinking we can do is just add this conversation, tag it along and kind of patch things up so that we can put this together as part of one big MP3 show to kind of try to recapture as much as we can here that was lost the first go around. So,
sure.
Yeah. Well, any more particulars? Or Joe, do you have any questions that you'd like to ask as far as this the Sasquatch story goes?
Well, I'd like to know if you have a an inherent belief in this sort of activity, you know, either ghosts, spirits, disembodied entities, that sort of thing. If you have a pre-existing belief in this, you're more likely to find them. I'm just talking in general. I'm just being the devil's advocate here.
Or they find you.
I'm into very, very hard science.
They find you.
I'm into hard science.
I didn't at the time. I didn't believe in Bigfoot. You know, I heard about it, but they were true. I saw it, and I wasn't, like, thinking it or anything when I left.
Yeah. No, because I know very, very rational people, one of whom is a former law enforcement officer, retired, and lives in Oklahoma. He's a straight up, you know, conservative kind of guy. And he goes out every weekend on investigations hunting them Bigfoot. So, they have sightings, they've taken helicopters out, but I don't subscribe to the idea of of an independent intelligent species that would elude our detection.
Yeah. In Oregon. I guarantee you that. I saw it was real. There's no doubt in it. I mean, I was like at least three feet from Bigfoot himself.
How about these UFO stories that you were talking about too? I guess, Joe, you missed out on that, but they cover this in UFO Hunters, and in fact, I think this police officer you're referring to, he actually did find himself on UFO Hunters for a couple of episodes, one of which I think was the cows are abducted, the cow carcasses?
Strange Harvest.
Yep.
Yeah, Linda Moulton Howe brought that to attention in the late 70s and early 80s at first.
Yeah, the mutilations.
Cattle mutilations.
Well, and what is the name of the guy? I think I know the guy you're talking about because he's
Ken Storch.
That's right, because he helps out with the John Ford case, doesn't he? He's a part of that.
Right.
He's a supporter trying to work on helping to get John, basically, you have him returned back to, released out into mainstream society after being locked in considered a dangerous, criminally insane type individual because of seeing, because of UFO investigations and politics, local politics, of course. But
I'll be honest with you. I would feel safer with John sleeping on my couch. Okay? Let me put it that way. He would feel bad about swatting a fly. And there's nothing to this. We'll talk about that another time, but Ken wouldn't be involved in this. He used to be a narcotics officer. He used to go undercover for months at a time. He's a very thorough investigator. And you don't have to be a believer to believe in the situation with John Ford, because all you have to do is look at the facts of the case and how it was carried out, how the arrest was conducted, how the incarceration is being conducted through mental health services in New York.
Yeah. Hey, Joe, you're breaking up a little bit there, Joe. I'm not sure if you're drifting away from the mic or what's going on. A little bit of static, and sounds like you're kind of a little further away from things than what maybe you could be. But
Sorry about that. It's almost 2 a.m. over here.
you're on the verge. You've taken your meds.
I'm trying to connect here.
On the verge of passing.
I'm trying to connect to you guys. It's 11 a.m. I'm right. Sorry, 11 p.m.
Oh, geez. Oh, man.
Son of a gun.
Yeah, no, because you showed up kind of late. I was wondering what was happening there, because you said you'd try to make it, you know, you'd be there ready to go with bells on. But, and you just were not able to rip anything as far as the recording goes, not even the end part of things. That's unfortunate. My OBS just shut down, man. Although I went back and I'm looking at it. It says here it's still streaming and recording, so what the hell's going on? You know, I'm getting like mixed signals there big time. But let's continue.
I have a window up right now on another device, and it says streaming has stopped.
No, we're not streaming. We're definitely not streaming. We're recording here, so we're offline, and we're just having a conversation.
Okay.
That will archive, and like I said, maybe add it to the feature episode because of what we missed out on conversation-wise. Now, let's just follow up then, because, Deborah, just quickly, if you would, this is really quite fascinating, these UFO encounters and the witnessing. I guess they would call you an experiencer of sorts, much along the lines of what happened in Phoenix with the Phoenix Lights with so many people. You yourself saw something, well, based out of, these names, I tell you, man, not needles, not weed. What was the name there that you threw out at us? California, little city there?
Carlsbad.
So that's where this all took place. And was this before or after the needles incident where this... your occurrence kind of all went down.
The needles, I never saw anything in needles. I read about that story.
Right.
You know, I heard about it because I'm in the area. But the Carlsbad, I was there for that.
Well, let's hear it. We want to know it one more time, if you would, just a bit of a rundown, because this is really quite something.
My daughter woke up in the middle of the night. I had a crib in the corner, and she woke up, so I went over there, and I noticed that there was small little red balls, like, going everywhere, like a strobe light. And as I watched them, they kept getting larger and larger and larger, and they went from, like, golf ball size to, like, basketball size to excessively large size, you know. And they were just going everywhere. As I picked my daughter up, because I was like, they're getting bigger, I didn't know what it was, you know, I thought... In the beginning, I thought somebody was outside the window, but as they grew larger, it became frightening because I wasn't sure what it was, you know. And then as they got bigger and bigger, I went and yelled at my husband, who was asleep at the time, and he woke up. And right when he woke up, the lights were gone. So I gave my husband and my daughter, and I went running outside, and I saw the UFOs in the sky along with everybody else in the neighborhood. So then I went back in, and I told my husband, we got in a car. We started going down the road, and as we were started heading towards the ocean, which was Oceanside at the time, and Oceanside and Carlsbad, that area, that's when the military helicopters came. So, I mean, we just kind of turned around and just left it at that. But everybody got in the neighborhood.
Pardon me? Everyone in the neighborhood did what exactly?
They seen it, yes.
Right.
They seen UFOs.
Well, needles, that's the exact same thing that happened in needles, too. There is this phenomenon, and so a lot of people claim to have seen these lights or some sort of craft. And then shortly thereafter, there comes the military with their jet fighters and helicopters and the whole bit. So how about that?
That UFO crashed along the Colorado River there.
The one in needles, yeah.
That's how the boat driver saw it, because he was on the boat at the time. He was the driver of the boat, and he saw supposedly saw the UFO crash and was able to pinpoint where the crash was or when the men in black showed up, you know.
Well, wait a minute. And he's disappeared now? Because I think he was on the UFO Hunter show. They Bill Burns and his colleagues there, they interviewed him.
Right. That's You know, that's what I've read. That's what they're saying. But you know, I don't know if it's true or not.
Right. Yeah, we'd want to fact check that, whether he's disappeared or not. But, I mean, maybe he didn't say everything that he saw or something like that, and he quietly let it be known to a few of his friends that there was more to the story. And that's when the powers that be moved in, and helped him.
If I remember correctly, his name was Bob or something like that. But something boat Bob or something like that.
Bob,
but it was Bob.
Bob the boat guy.
Yeah.
Joe, have you heard about this? Carlsbad Needles.
I heard about it, but that particular one I can't talk about. Unfortunately, because I was involved in things like.
I'm sorry, you can't talk about it because why exactly?
Well, from time to time I get to look at things that satellites or aircraft or pods or parts of aircraft. You have to identify them one way or the other, and I can't really talk about that particular case, but ordinarily what they do is they cordon off the area. They throw on a flatbed truck and haul it out of there and clean up the ground. That's about it. You know, if they can move it, if it's small enough. And they're usually just the larger craft tend not to crash. The smaller ones do. They get them out of there in a hurry, and they, even if they have to pay people off, if they have to threaten them repeatedly, people tend to shut up about it after a while, or they get discouraged, or they get discredited, or they get thrown in the loony bin. I mean, it's not the first time it's happened, but usually they just want to know, when I get out to one of these places, I just ask, do we know where it came from? Do we know who it belongs to, rather? That's my first question. Do we know who it belongs to? Now, I could get a yes or a no answer for that and look at something that's 400, 500 years ahead in technology, and it might be an affirmative answer. And again, I might look at something similar, something like it's powered by something the size of a watch battery that's giving off a very low level of radiation, but nothing dangerous. Powering a whole bunch of, all sorts of strange systems that I have no idea what they're doing. And basically I have to write a synopsis about it and determine the mass based on size and, big samples, things like that. But, I've said stop doing that because I'm disabled, and it's a strange situation. It's a strange situation because they'll say, if they say yes, we know who it belongs to, and it doesn't look like technology that's 20 years down the road. It looks like it's 200, 400, maybe 500 years down the road because of the power source.
Joe, you're kind of fading out a little bit there again, man. You're going to have to get closer to the mic so we can hear a little better.
I've been unplugging in and unplugging cables and going from phone to phone since 11 p.m.
Yeah. Sometimes, you got a good feed there sometimes, good streams where you got things set up with your headphones and whatnot. But,
I just have, I'm speaking into a cell phone and I have the speaker on. I don't even know where my headphones are.
Uh-oh.
It's really dark in here.
Oh, no.
And my friend's asleep.
Anyways, Deborah, so Joe is, he's got, even still, I guess, something of like a high-level military clearance, and that's why he's saying that he can't talk about these things in too much detail because of his, I guess, what he's signed on for. But I guess he maybe knows a little. I'm not sure if he knows too much anything about this particular case or not. But this is definitely quite something. So I'm not sure if there's anything more you want to add to that. Go ahead.
Say that really did happen. You know, because I've talked to people in the area and just asked them if they ever heard about it, and they're like, "Oh yeah." Yeah. And then they'll just say the same thing that I told you. You know?
We had a situation on Long Island. It happens every so often. It happened in the early to mid-90s. Late 1970s to early 1980s.
It's happening again now.
And again.
Bit of a flop going on now.
Yeah. It's receding now, but when it first happened, one guy drove himself off the road, killed himself, and it was seeing three towns on the South Shore. I'm on the North Shore, and I still had stuff flying over, power cutting out during the day, two or three times during the day. When it first started, now it's like every other day. And then you hear the helicopters and you hear the jet aircraft, which are obviously not, they're going too low and too fast, but military. And I barely look out the window anymore. And it's become so commonplace that, I mean, I'm not kidding you. We had stuff in the 90s, there's a neighborhood park stuff. Something would land and take off. People wouldn't stop mowing their lawns. It becomes like a cognitive dissonance. Like nobody wants to say that they saw it. Everybody's outside. Everybody sees it, and they just go about their business like it's none of my business. That's the mentality on Long Island, at least in Suffolk County. It's very conservative. A lot of people work with military contractors and subcontractors. And nobody wants to open their mouth. But this one generated at least 1,000 reports, and it was on a local news station that is anti-UFO. And, you know, I mean, they don't want to acknowledge anything about it. They're owned by the cable service and the news service out here on Long Island is owned by the politicians. And they don't want anything to do with this. Okay, they don't want to stir a pot. So this stuff happens, and it gets so bad that people just take as a consequence of ordinary everyday life, and they don't do anything about it, and then it goes away, and nobody talks about it. So that's the thing that bothers me. When it happens so frequently that it becomes commonplace, and then it stops happening. It's very, very, very stressful to watch it. Because you can't walk over to your next door neighbor and say, hey, did you see that? Of course he saw it. He's out there mowing his lawn. He didn't stop. I don't know what to say. It's different when you're not, I guess, in a suburban area. The houses are right next door to each other. You know, like 20, 50 feet away from the next door neighbor, you know. Probably when we're out in the desert, wooded areas, mountainous areas, Long Island is flat, it's small, you know, it's south of Connecticut, east of New York City, there's a lot of very wealthy people on the South Shore, out in the Hamptons and so forth, and ordinary people up where I live, you know, we have great beaches on the North Shore, but this kind of stuff just shouldn't happen. And there's so much activity at times that it's distracting. And it was distracting enough to cause someone's death. That's what really bothers me.
Yeah. There's a guy that drove off the road, I guess, Deborah.
Yeah.
Saw something and got kind of startled, and I think either off into a river or off a telephone pole or something or another, but ended up losing his life. So one of the things we talked about, though, in the second part of the show, I think we probably missed out on going into that, or at least having it recorded, was the whole connection between poltergeist activity and, you know, something that I think, because Deborah, you've, I'm sure, investigated a little bit of not just ghosts and hauntings, but also more the poltergeist end of things, which I guess there's, you know, quite similar in some cases, I suppose. Maybe you can elaborate on that. But how the connection between poltergeist activity and UFOs and even sometimes Bigfoot has been kind of thrown into the mix there as well. I know we talked about that once again in the feature end of things, but I think we missed out as far as it being recorded. So if you want to just maybe address or tackle that, we can see if we can maybe just hash that whole area over and kind of take a look at it for the next couple minutes and see what kind of good stuff comes out of it all.
I think people want to try to make the connection between Bigfoot, aliens, and poltergeist activity because it's all strange and extraordinary stuff, you know? But I really don't think there's a connection there.
When you saw that creature on the side of the road, was that at any... Had there been UFO activity in the region around that time at all?
No.
Nothing you're aware of. Okay. No.
But if you read the stories of the area, which I did after years later, there's been a lot of people that saw Bigfoot there. I mean, not just the one I saw. They said they described another one as red-haired, you know, kind of like blondish red hair. That was down at the river, which is not very far from Mount Shasta. There's also a story of seeing Bigfoot go through a door that's located at Mount Shasta, which I don't know if there is, but that's what they say. So, I mean, I don't know. But I do know what I saw.
You know, the people that are going after the you know, that are following up on these stories, these are not crazy people. These are not people that are prone to fantasy. People like Ken Storch, Marilyn Carlson, you know, really good, solid investigators, people that look into things scientifically. They believe in this, but I don't see any basis in, I don't see how it could possibly happen biologically, that these things could exist and stay hidden for so long. Unless we're talking about very sparsely populated areas, and they've been moving to, you know, villages or enclaves of these things out west or in the Midwest. We never hear about that kind of stuff in New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, Massachusetts, you know, the whole Northeast. You never hear about Bigfoot. And as soon as you go to talk about like Northern Texas, Colorado, Oklahoma, and points west, New Mexico, California, Northern Arizona. You know, everybody says, oh yeah, I've seen one. Every third person has seen one. Mm-hmm. And, so, you know, it leads me to believe that there's something to it, but it may not be another species. It may be, you know, an enclave of some people that were, you know, so greatly inbred that they just came out like that and they just stay together. I don't know. I don't know what to make of it. I really don't have an opinion on Bigfoot. But,
no.
But I do know what I hear. I hear.
I have no doubt that was Bigfoot. I can tell you exactly what it looked like. The hair was long. It smelled really bad.
Wow.
You could smell it.
Wow.
That's something.
Yeah. You know? It was eating, was like intestines, you know, because it picked it up like this. You know, I don't know if you can see me, but it picked it up like this and was like, oh, and then it saw me and looked at me.
And was not happy. It was not happy to see you either.
No, it was not. I guess I interfered with its dinner time or time, whatever.
But you know what's interesting too is that you think that it would have detected you because, I mean, nighttime driving with your headlights on, presumably. Coming, was it a straight stretch of highway? Was it on a corner? You know, you think?
It was on a corner. It was on a corner after a cow's guard. I don't know if you know what that is.
Yeah, sure.
But it's like a grill looking thing that's in the road.
Yeah,
keep the cows from the grass.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cattle guard. Well, and was it a dust? Was it a ungraveled road? A kind of dusty
pavement.
Pavement, hey. So
asphalt.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
What about this business and a poltergeist activity? I know you talked during the show about these floating candles. Maybe Joe, did you hear about what she said about this? Maybe if she wouldn't mind, she could just kind of revisit that. Joe, did you get a chance to hear that story during the main event?
No, unfortunately, as I said, it was skipping. I would get one or two words, and then another two words.
Oh, jeez.
From the other room. That's the router. Then we stopped streaming. I just said, oh, boy.
We had a number of people join us, too, there, and then everyone probably, I guess, just, like, said, forget it. Like, this is just crap. So that's really unfortunate. Oh, my God. But anyways,
the YouTube stream was just horribly congested.
Jeez.
You know, it's never been like that before, either.
You think that's so? You think that's net neutrality is the issue there? That's effectiveness then.
Absolutely.
All right.
Absolutely.
Well, okay. We'll talk about that more. Let's talk about that more after then. Right now, if you would, Deborah, let's just hear that candle story once again. I think Joe might be interested in this.
Oh yeah.
Mr. Scientific skepticism and all. So.
Well, my mom told me a story a long time ago that, and she keeps repeating it a lot, or she did before she passed away. But she said that her mom and dad used to go to work late at night. And since her older brother was older at night, well, when they went to bed, she said that she was laying in her room and the door, the bedroom door opened up and a candle came floating through the room, like coming across the bed and just like kind of circle the room and then go back out the door and shut the door behind her. You know, and like she would freak out so bad that she, you know, all of her brothers and sisters would go running down the stairs after that and hide behind the couch till their mom and dad got home. But yeah, it was just a levitating, floating type candle going across the room in a circle. So she tells the same story every single time.
Dead serious about it.
I'm sorry, Jeff. I just want to, was it like a candle flame? Or was it an entire candle holder?
I can't hear him.
Oh, I'm sorry. Can you be a little more precise with the description? Was it a candle flame, the candle itself, the candle in a holder, more definitive with
it? Yeah, she said it was in a candle holder. I remember asking her, was it like one of those fat round candles or a skinny candle or whatever? And she said it was like a skinny candle. She can't remember exactly how wide it was. But she said that she saw it floating around the room.
Wow. She wasn't pranking you. She wasn't trying to pull your wooden leg or nothing either, I guess, eh?
No.
Very serious.
You keep repeating the same story every single time. And it's precise. Like, wow. When somebody doesn't tell the truth, they don't tell the same story every single time. You know? Word for word. At least.
Did she mention casting a shadow, or, you know, was she able to, you know, block the light out and see it cast the shadow? And it looked solid, or did it seem like,
No, there was no shadow. It was just
It actually looked like a candle, like a solid candle?
Yeah, it was a solid candle.
So it wasn't something ethereal? Like a...
It was a what?
A hologram. Yeah, a hologram projection.
I don't know. No. Because she wasn't the only one who saw it. She said that her brothers and sisters said that the candle came floating through their room before hers, too.
Wow.
It was a candle they had in the house, I think is what it sounds like a candle holder and the candle, something that was, like, just probably located in the other room that decided to make a visit, floating through space into their bedroom. Is that not the case, Deborah? It was something they recognized, the candle and the candle holder, as being a part of one of their household items?
Well, I presume. I mean, my mom could describe the candle holder to a T, and it was like an S type pearl shape, you know, with a round top.
Sure.
I can picture that. I'm imagining, and that's exactly what I picture. That's why I asked.
Deborah also talked about her mother, who's now passed away, but says that she apparently has tried to make contact from the other side. She picked up a EVP, I think, is what it's known as, an electronic voice phenomenon that she recorded. Was that in the ghost box that you caught that, or what? How did you go about doing that exactly?
Oh, that was on my voice recorder. Made that on her bed, I believe. That's when I picked it up.
And that would be on tape, right?
It's an electronic voice recorder. It's not taped, no. There's no tape.
Oh, so it's got a cardioid mic, but it converts. So it must be being picked up at the microphone rather than being imprinted on a ferromagnetic tape. It seems that the old EVP phenomenon, they used to have to use either videotape or audio tape and rewind the tape and put a high-gain amplifier on it to hear the speech or the crying or whatever was on there. And that electronic, all electronic device?
This is all electronic. It's not tape. Like, I understand what you're saying. Like, if you put a tape in the old ones and you play the tape so much that, you know, even if you tried to clear the tape, if the old stuff's going to bleed through and it's going to kind of make a different sound, or you're going to hear different voices because it bled through. But not on the electronic ones. This does not have a tape. It's just all electronic.
So something has to be vibrating the little cardioid mic that's built into it, or inducing a current on to the differential pair going down to the high gain amplifier with a microphone, which means it's an electromagnetic phenomenon or an acoustical phenomenon.
Right.
So it's not an input as people have suggested in the past.
What happened was she heard her mother supposedly come through, recognized her, the voice as being her mother's, say that simply, "I love you," was what she seemed to hear. She's got a copy of it, actually, too. That's, you can find it up on YouTube. It's a, you know, pretty decent quality version. If she's, you know, more can be done, I suppose, to clean it up and really have it really kind of out there. But, yeah, I heard it for sure. It was really quite something.
I don't really want to try to clean stuff up or mess with it, you know, because so many people sit there and go, "Well, it's been messed with, and, you know, it's probably Photoshopped, or it's, you know, something's happened to it for not to be real," you know, touching anything.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
that way people know that this real stuff.
Yeah. What I was saying, though, like, because the way you recorded it, you've got the actual recording itself, but then you've, how did you record it onto YouTube? You just had like a video camera. You picked it up on the video camera mic. The original recordings is transmitted from one device to the next, I guess. All I'm saying is I think you could do it a little differently so it could be more, you're not going to change it, of course. You're just going to just, you know, have it so it's cleaner and more.
I uploaded it on my computer straight from my voice recorder, okay? Because I have that little software that you can do that with.
Uh-huh.
And it'll put it right onto a little, like a desktop of its own, you know. And then I took my camera, you know, and you guys are hearing what you hear from that audio.
Yeah.
That's straight audio.
Mm.
If you can make that, I'll do a spectrum analysis.
Well, yeah, I mean, Deborah, you could send Joe the raw audio if you don't mind, and he could take a look at it. But there's also the link on YouTube, Joe, that she's got up there in her YouTube account. You can check it out.
Yeah, as long as it's the same thing. Because, you know, then I can make a copy of it, I can amplify it, and then just do a spectrum analysis on it to find out, you know, what's signal and what's noise, and, you know,
right,
even voice problems.
Yeah.
One thing modulated by the device and some voices do simple life.
Deborah, you probably wouldn't believe it by the way he's sounding right now, but actually Joe is something of an audio expert, believe it or not. Currently, I don't know if he's made this clear or not, but he's actually, I think, as always, or is typically the case, hacked into a satellite again here to access us and be able to carry on something of a conversation here via Google Hangouts. So, yeah, no, he's a technical wizard for sure.
I'm fully legal tonight. I actually have a fiber optic connection. This is the first time I'm using it. And, no, I'm not hacking a satellite. I'm testing on a fiber optic connection. And initially, I thought that's what the problem was. So I was tracing it down because I figured, well, if I'm going to be online, you know, I have an email account and so forth, sooner or later I'm going to get caught again. And if I get caught again, it's going to be a big fine. I'm not going to get thrown in jail, but it's going to be a fine. So I have, I'm not going to say the name of the company, but it's a famous fiber optic carrier. Internet. Of course, they sold me the three pack, which I don't, you know, I'm not going to use my phone. I'm not going to use their television service. I only want the internet. I get 50 megabits a second up, 50 down, which is about the bandwidth I use so I don't get caught on the sideband of the satellite. So it's about the same. And this is the first time I'm coming on legally. Isn't that great?
Wonderful.
Okay. Well, hey, Deborah, I'm not sure if you got any closing remarks or anything, but you've been great here and don't want to keep you tied over for too long. Joe has done his best here to help contribute to things in the after show, Rogues Gallery. And I don't know, I think it's really too bad we couldn't have picked up that last portion of what we recorded, because I think it came out pretty good, actually, although we did manage to kind of make up for it, hopefully, by re-recording what we've done here just in the after show. Although I hate to tell you that I'm looking at my specs here on this end, and it does say it's still recording, that it's kind of frozen. The clock, the timer itself is not moving, so I really don't know what the hell is. This is one of those weird things, so, you know. Maybe it's all your fault, Deborah. I don't know.
You got frozen in time.
The ghost lady's done it again. So, yeah. Any closing remarks?
I just want to thank you. And we got to do this again. Like, we should have, like, a little roundtable discussion, you know?
Yeah, well, hey, look, how about Halloween? I know it's a bit of a ways down the road, but we did a Halloween thing last year, and if we could do another, like a Halloween roundtable would be great. We'd totally up for something.
Sure.
Yeah.
A real live witch. Yeah.
Deborah's not a witch, though. She's a Christian. That's how she self-identifies.
Well, that's okay.
It's just that she has...
That's for Halloween.
People call me a witch, though.
Right.
But I'm not.
Well, you look the part a little bit, actually, believe it or not. And when you're kind of dabbling or have, you know, something to do with these sort of occult, and the word occult just means hidden or unseen, you know, kind of paranormal, supernatural matters that, yeah, people, I'm sure you had a few people kind of give you some strange looks from time to time.
Oh, yeah. Like I said, I've been called a witch, and things happen around me that's almost like witchy type things, you know, so. But I mean, if they wouldn't say that, why not?
Ceremony of black candles.
The candle story is true. I mean,
black candles.
As far as my mom and dad.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm only kidding. I'm only messing with you.
If you heard all those stories, you would be shocked at what they say, too. They had, like, a lot of interesting stories.
Your parents did?
Yes.
Oh, I'm sure. Like, well, hey, it was your dad that kind of helped you get into this whole thing, as you've said, when you were a kid, and he'd have some time off of work, and he would take you and the rest of the family out and tour around the countryside, and you would, I guess you would all go explore these dilapidated, rundown houses, and have your little picnics and whatnot, I guess, and afternoon outings. Is that, you know, that's the case, right?
Yeah, it wasn't just houses, it was the caverns and it was the mines and stuff like that that was around there, the caves even. You know, caves that people don't go to. Back in Missouri, which that's where we lived at, you know, they paid to go into those caves. And my dad knew all the caves that you didn't have to go pay for, because he used to explore when he was a kid, you know.
So. Wow. How about that?
Cool.
And is your dad still alive?
No.
Okay, he passed away too, I guess, as tends to be the case. Yeah. Usually the husbands pass away before the wives, so. But that's something really amazing. So it seems to be something of a family affair. And let's not forget, too, I don't know if we got this in the main end of the discussion or not. Another thing Deborah claims, too, is to have some sort of her ancestral family tree has been written down, and she has it all logged. And some lineage of some sort that she claims goes all the way back to the time of Christ, Joe, if you can believe that. I've asked for proof. It's like, okay, well, let's see. Let's get that out there on Facebook maybe you can do it privately and, you know, more discreet.
Just look at St. Stephen's.
Who?
St. Stephen's.
Any royalty in the
St. Stephen.
It's in the Bible.
Oh, St. Stephen, yeah. He was a martyr. Paul had him murdered, I believe.
That's correct.
That's right, yes. Wasn't he, in fact, said to be one of the brothers of Christ?
He was a follower, I think.
Okay. I'm not a big advocate of Paul at all. I'm not a big fan of his at all. I don't care what anybody says, and I know some fundamentalists don't like that, but forget it. No way. Uh-uh. Don't, not buying it. No, he was a usurper and a troublemaker. And Thomas Jefferson, in fact, I guess, went through the Bible. He cut out all the miracles, for one. But I guess also anything to do with Paul, I think, as I recall, he didn't want to have anything to do with that character.
But he wanted a moral code that was non-secular, non-religious moral code.
Yeah.
And he extracted that information from the Bible and cut out all the magic tricks.
Right. Right. Yeah.
And John, George, Paul, Ringo. I'm guessing. Uh-huh. You know what I'm saying.
Sure.
Well, Franklin that did that? Was that Jefferson? Or
Jefferson. Well, Ben Franklin was a member of the Hellfire Club.
Right.
That's how that... And maybe, Deborah, I'm not sure if you heard or not, but there's a big story that came out a number of years ago where they found all these corpses, these bodies, skeletons, and that sort of thing, underneath one of the houses where Franklin had lived for a number of years in England. That doesn't mean he's guilty of dissecting and, you know, cadavers or, you know, what ritual murder or who knows what it could have possibly been. Just simple, straightforward, just innocent medical procedures. But, you know, who knows, really. But it could have been, too. It could have been kind of Jack the Ripper sort of style mentality. And his membership in the Hellfire Club, I mean, they don't really have the greatest reputation as far as these things go. They tend to be a little bit sort of out there, to say the least, from what I hear, so...
He was a physician.
You know Thomas Jefferson is related to me.
I'm sorry, he's a distant relative?
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh, yeah.
So is Wyatt
Earp. Oh, well, how about that, huh? So maybe, who knows, yeah, who knows what the deal is there, but I mean, yeah, we all come from somewhere, and 6 degrees of bacon is how I like to put it. Yeah, 6 degrees of bacon. Yeah. So, yeah. Anyways, folks, look, we're going to have to end it on that note. I know, because these conversations, I mean, you know, they can go on for ages. But on top of that, I try not to keep people kind of tied over for too long. But, Deborah, we very much appreciate your being a part of things here today with us on Pirate Radio Podcast. We're going to end things. I'm not sure if you're a big fan or not, but Lynyrd Skynyrd's Freebird. Just because, you know, it seems to make sense and along the lines of you going around and maybe wanting to help free a few spirits, lost souls that have been trapped, and they want to find their way to the other side. So on that note, thank you, everybody, and you have yourselves a great evening.
Tomorrow.